next guest in the house to share a bit of her story. You'll hear more at Baker Bookhouse tomorrow night. At 7, we'll talk about that. Let's talk first of all about Rebecca's story. It's described as captivating, a portrait of resilience, faith through darkness, and hope. She was just 4 years old when her village was attacked. While fleeing her home, she escaped gunfire, soldiers, wild predators on foot, and certainly ended up, safe and sound here, ultimately, right here in Grand Rapids. Let's talk about the work that you will be discussing tomorrow night, What They Meant for Evil, How a Lost Girl of Sudan Found Healing, Peace, and Purpose in the Midst of Suffering. Enough from me. Let's talk to you, Rebecca Deng. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Kelly.
Yay. We will find you tomorrow night, Baker Bookhouse.
Yes. Yep, looking forward to it.
7 o'clock, 2768 East Paris Avenue. So, yes, we'll get our questions, your questions asked of Rebecca, but here we are. Let me set the scene. Rebecca Dengs, D-E-N-G-S, your gripping account, a test to the power of faith and forgiveness. I'm not sure where to even start, my friend, with the exception of you have a smile on your face, and is home Grand Rapids at this point?
Yes, Holland, yes, Michigan, yes. Yep, Grand Rapids.
Another introduction, and then it is time for your story. A member of South Sudan's Dinka tribe, you, one of the 89 lost girls that grew up in the Second Sudanese Civil War, 1983 to 2005. Man, what are some memories, Rebecca? Let's just get into some good, bad, and the uglies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my memories really started in my village, in a place called Duk, in an area that is Jonglei State now in South Sudan. Back then, it used to be called Sudan, the country, and then South Sudan became an independent country in 2011. So I grew up really, I would say from ages 0 to 4, just knowing nothing of a war, but living a peaceful environment, having my mom and my dad was in the government, in the SPLA, fighting the Khartoum government. So he will be coming in and out, but I didn't really see anything. I heard that there was a war being fought, but for what, I didn't really get it. And so I had a peaceful childhood to age 4. And then at age 4, there was one attack, which my mom actually passed away because she was having a baby during that day and did not make it. So that was my first really eye-opening to what is going on. And then life went back to normal again. My grandmother, which you will read in the book, raised me, and everything was normal for a while. And then in 1991, some people say August, some people say it was July. I didn't know the month. I just knew that one morning I woke up and people were running and we were all over the place, all our cows were stolen and people were mixed together. It was like overwhelming. And so,
how old were you at that point?
At that point, I was just turned 6 years old. So when I was 6, then we left the village. And so it took me a year from when I was 6 and then to when I entered Khartoum refugee camp. So it took a year from my village making my way all the way to Kenya border, at a place called Okeechobee, where the United Nations came and took us to a refugee camp in northern Kenya called Kakuma. And so Kakuma refugee camp was really where I will call home, because I arrived and it was December. I think we arrived sometime in October or November, I can't remember, but I just remember celebrating there, and I had turned 7. And so my life from a refugee camp, as you can imagine, you know.
What is it? I mean, a stereotype is you're living in tents and walking barefoot.
Yeah, walking barefoot, living in a tent, not really having enough food to eat. Yeah. You know, like there's no organization. Like, for example,
was your grandma still with you?
No, my grandmother, we left her in the village. And unfortunately, I heard the news when I was in a camp that she passed. She didn't make it. So that was traumatizing. And This is what I would say about life in a refugee camp. Yeah. When people ask me, I say life is in a refugee camp is like being on a life machine. You are not dying and you are not living. So just imagine that. Take it in a minute. You are not dying, you're not living. You're not dying in a sense that you have sustainable thing like UN give us corn or beans to live with. But and then you kind of go to refugee school sometime. Teachers come, sometimes they don't come. And then maybe when you reach to, for example, when I was there, if you graduated from high school, which is what we call Form 4, that's it. That's your life. You don't have any dream after that to continue.
Is this mostly for women or?
I would say for everybody in a refugee camp, it was really hard, unless if you have a scholarship or God grace, you have some family member that came to the West and that they put you through school. But yeah, life was really difficult.
Yes, and again, much more in your book, What They Meant for Evil, How a Lost Girl of Sudan Found Healing, Peace, and Purpose in the Midst of Suffering. But I would like to know what brings you to Grand Rapids?
So I came through Grand Rapids in 2000 through the program called the Lost Boys of Sudan. Within that Lost Boys of Sudan program, there were 89 girls that came, and I'm one of those 89 girls. I was what they call an accompanied refugee minor. I came when I was 15, going to 16. So that means that I had to come through a resettlement agency. So I came through Bethany Christian Services, and then they placed me with a foster family in Harlan, Michigan. So that foster family took me in and helped, you know, just helped me to adjust. Adjust to American life, adjust to the language, adjust to the food and culture. Because when I came, I didn't speak a word of English. I kind of knew, like, basic thing, like a boy, girl, he, yeah. she, but I couldn't really carry on a conversation for a long time. So I had to, you know, go to ESL classes and... Yeah.
Did you have others from your camp that you were able to at least share some commonalities with?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So there were few girls that were resettled here in Grand Rapids, and some of them actually were in the same group that I was in Kakuma Refugee Camp, and some were not in the same group, but I knew them. And what Bethany did really well was that they introduced foster parents. So most of our foster families in the beginning will take us to the same church so that we can see each other. And that was really nice, because everything was overwhelming, but having somebody that you can speak, that I can speak my heart language, that was really important. And yes, I did get to hang out with them. And then on weekend, we'll get together every now and then. So that was really, really nice. But I would say that the most important thing for me when I arrived in this land, November 6th of 2000, what was important was that I arrived at the airport and I had a foster family waiting for me and took me to a warm, nice house. I would have not imagined if I had arrived in this country and had to be held in a tent or something, that would have been traumatizing. Yeah. So my first lodging night set the tone for the rest of my life. I would say that when I was welcome and have a nice home.
Yes, kudos to your family and certainly Bethany, that global nonprofit that does support kids and families with world-class social services. And again, the book is out, What They Meant for Evil. Yeah, you wrote a book about the story, Rebecca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my life story. And really... in that book, you will see it's about my life, but what I want to do or what I had in mind, and to bless others, people, and to just call people into this journey of being open up to difficulties. To as American, we are a nation that is founded on our generosity, to be open to others, even when it is difficult to sit down to talk. And there is a lot of talk now about refugees and who they are and who they are not. And what is frustrating is that most of the former refugees, I'm an American citizen, I'm proud to be American, but I know how it was to be a refugee, or I was a refugee, is my experience. But those former refugees or people that have worked with refugees are not included at the table. And I had a quote that I read before that say that until the lions have voice, every story about the lion will only honor or, you know, elevated the hunter. So, yes. Until we have refugees and former refugees and people that work with refugees sit at the table, at the policy table of our nation, and discuss how can we best address this issue, I think is...
We still have a challenge ahead, yes. Mm-hmm. All right, so tomorrow night, Baker Bookhouse, 7 o'clock, where you will continue sharing more of the details, but yet we can get a copy of your book, I trust, in our own backyard.
Mm-hmm. Yes, tomorrow night at Baker's Bookhouse at 7 p.m., and I'll be there to do book signing. I will be speaking, and if people want to hear more about refugees, there will be some people from Bethany there.
I would think, the need for foster homes and other ways to help remains. Is there a website or more to find out about you?
Yes, you can go to whattheymeantforevil.com, whattheymeantforevil.com, or look me up on Facebook, Rebecca Deng. It's R-E-B-E-C-C-A. Last name is D-E-N-G. And I'm looking forward to talk to you.
Thank you for sharing your story, Rebecca.
Thank you, Shelley.